This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. It's our regular gardening show today. We'll talk about the heat, the rain, or the lack of rain, dealing with weeds. We'll answer your questions, too. Joining me are CEO of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, Inc., John Butcher. Hi, John.
Hey.
Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher. Hey, Corey.
Hi.
And Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Now, if you have a question, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email talk@wvxu.org. You know the drill. Get in early so you can get on. The phones get really busy towards the end of the show, so... We want you to get in and make sure you get to talk to our guest today. Thanks so much, as I said, for being here. It's a pleasure to talk to you all. It's hot. It is really hot.
Too hot. So
how do we take care of our plants in this heat? Mary, why don't you start us off?
Well, I've noticed that in the afternoon, my plants get fairly droopy, especially those that have the larger leaves, and they really look like they're wilting and that they need something. But you have to resist that urge to go out and pour a bunch of water on them right in the middle of the afternoon. The water evaporates quickly and maybe doesn't get to where it needs to on the roots. So they'll perk back up in the evening. It's better to water those plants in the morning or in the evening. But if you're seeing wilting in your garden, just let it take a couple hours. Maybe go inside, take a little break, and then check on them later.
Corey?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because there's a few species of plant, a lot of our native plants will wilt as an adaptation against losing water. So they're purposely sort of sucking that water back in so they don't lose it. As much as I like to talk about protecting your plants, I also want to make sure that people are protecting themselves. So not only is it better to water early in the morning and later in the evening, just so that the water can get further down to create those deeper roots so it's able to absorb in. It's also cooler then. So there is not a single plant or garden that is worth your health by getting out and trying to, you know, water plants in the middle of the day or trying to do garden. Nobody's going to care about weeds if it means, you know, heat stroke, right? So I always remind people, as much as I understand taking care of your plants, take care of yourself first.
Corey? All right. John, sorry.
I love all of those points, but I would make an exception to this on the standpoint of if your plant is in dire need of water and it's just beyond what looks like a little bit of wilting and cooling down, and we're not talking about watering the foliage, but watering the ground, you're better off to give it some water than none at all if we're at the point of no return.
If you've neglected it for quite a long time.
And in particular, and this isn't something that you're going to notice or it's going to be like happen over at one afternoon, but if the only time you have in your schedule to water a big important tree in your yard, which you're not doing every day, you're going to do once every week or two, maybe in a bad drought. But if you have a drip hose or a soaker hose, they're absolutely accurate that mornings and evenings are better, but I would rather see to get some deep level of watering can take several hours, and some people aren't available to do that in the morning or whatever. And so I just think that doing it in those extreme circumstances is sometimes you don't always get to pick the morning or evening, and I'd rather see the tree get a bunch of water than not at all.
And I'm glad you brought up the drip hose because, we do a lot of sprinkler watering, but that also should wait. But the drip hoses are very targeted, so if people can get their hands on those,
How do those work exactly? Drip hose. I mean, do you just, they have like little holes in them and little water comes out?
Imagine just a whole bunch of microscopic holes all throughout the hose. So it's just, they also call them weep hoses. They just sort of weep the water out of them and it goes directly to the soil. So not a lot of it gets evaporated. I mean, if you're just spraying the leaves on your plant, all that water is just getting lost to the atmosphere. And these weep hoses or soaker hoses now are really affordable. Timers that you just connect directly to your hose, battery powered, super affordable.
You can even get apps on your phone so you can do it remotely.
I didn't get that fancy with mine, but and that's even affordable. Like you can find ways of doing it. Watering in the middle of the day when you're not there, if you have to.
Well, let's talk about with the trees, John. When you put this around, where do you put the hose? Like right at the base of a tree or out a little bit, like at the drip line? I mean, where do you put it?
So there's going to be roots in a normal scenario all the way out past the drip line, but your highest concentration of roots tend to be closer to the trunk. So if you can't spread it out that far and you're trying to maximize the amount of water that's getting to this tree, being closer to the base is actually better than further away. But in a perfect world, you're watering all the way out to the drip line and even beyond in some cases, which that can be difficult to do. So if you have limited resources, focus a little closer to the base.
And would you put that under the mulch or on top of your mulch?
I don't think it matters. I think under might, like, you might have a little less loss, but at the end of the day, moving it around and not cutting it when you're doing your edging. I think sometimes having it exposed just makes it a little easier to manage.
If you're doing those really deep soaks too, you don't have to do it every day. So you can just, you know, rotate the soaker hose around the yard. So it's better to water really deeply than to water really shallowly more often, just water really deeply.
When you talk about that really deeply and putting those soaker hoses on, how long? I mean, if they're just dripping a little bit of water, how long do you leave them on?
It could take 5 or 6 hours in a dry soil, maybe even longer. And what I encourage people to do is check, go out in 2 hours and put your trowel in the ground. And you're probably going to find in a drought scenario after 2 or 3 hours, it's maybe an inch deep. It's just amazing how long it takes to really soak deep. And what we're trying to do is encourage the roots to grow deeper and chase water down low. And then when we have droughts, you have a root system that's way less susceptible to the drought because the roots are lower and there's more moisture down low. As the drought persists, it gets lower and lower, but the tree's in a better position all the way around if you've done it the right way.
This is Cincinnati Edition, and we're talking today about your gardens and your lawns and your flowers and your vegetables. You can join the discussion. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And I think last week this show got preempted, so we didn't get the calls in because we had a news conference on. So if you do have questions, get them in now. Get them in early so we can get everybody in. I hate when it happens. Everybody calls in the last minute. We can't get you on. 513-419-7100. You talk about several hours and those drip hoses and trying to make sure that everything gets wet. And you talk about drought situations. Where are we right now? I mean, we had so much rain and then now it's so hot and we're supposed to then have rain like from Friday to next Thursday. What's the situation right now, Mary?
I mean, plants really need about an inch, at most edible plants, if you're growing them in beds or pots or in ground, need about an inch of rain a week. It's nice to spread that out a little bit. But yeah, sometimes we're getting 3-4 inches of rain in these really massive rain events. And while that might seem like a lot, there's still only so much that plant can soak up. And then the rest of it percolates down or runs off. And so you really want to be paying attention to that, trying to get maybe a rain gauge in there or looking at your weather app to see if it's getting enough rain. I like to have these, you know, kind of lower intensity, longer showers. I really love the, you know, misting that kind of happens all day. That to me is a real good soak. But if we get a ton of rain in a short amount of time, I'm probably still out there watering a few days later. I've seen some really great things growing in the garden, too many weeds, but also the veggies seem to be looking pretty well. And there's a danger to overwatering. So our tomatoes especially get susceptible to these uneven watering periods, and then they can get blossom end rot and other issues. And so these uneven watering times can be really challenging for certain crops. But if you're trying to be consistent as much as possible, and then paying attention, if you're starting to see mold, if you're starting to see algae or mushrooms popping up, you know, maybe holding back and turning that timer off or down, just being able to adjust based on what you're seeing in the climate.
You mentioned mushrooms. I have to talk about one of my neighbors. I'm not kidding. I think they're trying to keep an eye on it just to see if they'll grow. I mean, they have a field of mushrooms in their side yard, and they have to be, at this point, the last time I looked, 6 to 8 inches tall, maybe. I mean, just, it's crazy. But I've heard mushrooms mean you have a healthy yard. Is that true or not? Are mushrooms a good or bad thing?
So what it means is that you have decaying organic matter, which is often, in the scenario that you're talking about, a tree was removed long ago, and those old roots
take a tree out there now
are starting to rot, and that can happen for years and years afterwards.
Fairy circles.
I was just going to.
So should you knock them down? What should you do with those mushrooms?
Just let them go. Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind with the mushrooms above the ground, you can think of those as almost flowers of that fungus, most of which is below ground. So those are like the fruiting bodies of the mushrooms, but there's more of that fungus in the soil that's helping with nutrient cycling and decomposing organic matter that might be there. So I would say, you know, celebrate it. Uh, I I am not a mushroom forager. Otherwise, I do like to, you know, forage, but mushroom foraging, I don't trust myself. So don't be grazing in your yard if you've got a lot of those mushrooms. But yeah, celebrate them. They're nice to have around.
Yeah, and if you have little ones or pets, you know, you can look them up. There's some really great apps you can use, like iNaturalist, mm-hmm. or a couple other things to try to ID those. And if they do seem like they're going to be toxic, you know, you could remove those with some gloves and put them in your compost or something like that.
If they're toxic, will they hurt your compost?
If you're having a healthy compost and it's getting up to 140, 160, a lot of that gets taken care of with the microorganisms that are breaking all of that down. But yeah, if you're seeing something really wild, definitely maybe call your extension office and like get a little bit more information. We have been seeing some interesting decomposers at the Civic Garden Center, you know, kind of the normals, but we found this really wild flathead worm that the kids were looking at during summer camp. And then we found out that it has like a toxin that it exudes from its skin.
The little hammerhead
worms? Yes. Yeah,
They're an exotic. I don't know how they got brought in, but they wild? They look like a hammerhead shark.
It was like almost 3 feet long. It was wild. Yeah. So that I'm not putting in my compost.
Okay.
They had all sorts of things online to try, like, oh, put salt on it. I don't know. We let the kids explore it, and then we put it into an ornamental faraway part of the garden.
Yeah. That's something. My gosh.
Yeah.
So what about weeds? You know, I don't like pulling weeds. My husband's very good about it. He gets a lot of the credit for all of our lawn work. I water our hibiscus and that's about it. But what about weeds? I mean, are weeds always bad?
I think your timing on weeds is really important. And I've come to embrace this a little bit more as I have tried to manage more of my yard, which is fairly natural. And if you are pulling these tiny weeds all the time as they're coming up, maybe you've got a stirrup hoe that you really like, and that's kind of taking care of it. But really, I am trying to wait now until I see that flowering phase is over and the seed has just started to form and it's not mature yet. So once the plant gets past that flowering stage, if you wait to pull it out, then you're doing a lot less work. You're keeping the seeds from spreading, but the plant has already exhausted so much of its energy into its reproductive cycle that it won't have as much to keep popping up on you. So if you can get that sweet spot, and it's not always going to be the same for all species, but right now I'm out there getting those seeding grasses that are starting to go or some of the other things. I'm like, oh, as soon as I start seeds forming, that's when I really get out there.
And lots of mulch. The other thing I suggest, not only with mulch, but with a lot of native landscaping, if you get a really healthy, let's say, butterfly garden with a bunch of different species going, you can't tell what a, you know, quote unquote, weed is from a non-weed. So you get away with a lot more when you've got more of a naturalistic style aesthetic in your yard. And then I also, after it rains is for me the best time to weed, because I feel like it's just a lot easier to pull the weeds out of the ground. Because if you pull them and you leave the roots behind, they're just coming back. So after the rain and again, mulching, I haven't had much of an issue. Just compost around a lot of my plants does just fine with keeping weeds away and amending the soil too.
Is there ever a time weeds are good?
Weeds can actually, I find, help keep some moisture in and shade out little small plants. So if I am replanting, like right now I'm succession planting basil because my basil tends to get very moldy and I don't have a lot of airflow where I have it.
What succession planting?
So I'm planting more every couple weeks.
Okay.
So that way I'm getting this new fresh crop and it's not being targeted by some of these fungal diseases. And so I'm actually planting some things now and I will be planting more things in the fall. And so sometimes I'll leave like the pokeweed, you know, so it can like shade out the little ones and then I'll cut it when the little ones are starting to get a little bit bigger. So sometimes I do use it as like kind of a living mulch.
I like to hear that. A reason not to have to pull them. We're talking about summer gardening today, and we're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. If you have a question or want to ask or have a comment even, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. Cincinnati Edition is working on a show in the lead up to the midterms, and we want to hear from you. What are the top issues for you in this election? You can call us at 513-419-7100. Leave your name and comment, and we may use your message in a future show. Now we're going to continue our gardening discussion today. My guests are CEO of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, Inc., John Butcher, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. If you have a question right now and you want to call us, 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And we do have an email from Rich, who says, we were talking about tree watering earlier, and he says the advice is confusing to him. He says if it's a large tree, he doesn't think it needs water unless it's been months without rain and we're in a drought situation. He says, we had a lot of rain the last few weeks and months. A few hot days or weeks does not qualify as a drought. Is it a normal reaction for a tree and a plant to drop leaves and droop? Native plants do even better than non-native ornamentals and vegetables. Panic after a hot week seems to be a knee-jerk reaction. Please, further elaboration from all the guests. So, John, we'll start with you.
Well, I would love to elaborate on this more. One thing I'll say is that I do not think the big trees need water right now with where we're at. But if we get into a scenario where this type of weather continues for a week or two or three, you're really going to want to water. The first thing I would target are the evergreens. Spruce trees in particular tend to have really shallow roots and they just dry out quickly and stress them. And even if we're saying plants need water, what I'm referring to is optimizing plant health care and not just getting by. So yeah, your big oak tree has lived for 100 years and maybe it's not going to die in a 2 month long drought. But I can tell you with great certainty, if you give it a nice long drink, it will be so much happier than if you have it struggling through this cracking clay soil for the whole summer. So I really do think that watering your important trees is one of the best uses of water in the landscape. And not to diminish the smaller shrubs or the gardener or anything else, but the trees are irreplaceable and that takes a lifetime to grow, and investing a little more in those and reducing stress can keep a lot of other problems away.
Good. What about, you mentioned a shrub. What about shrubs? I wonder about that. We talk about really watering the trees and watering the flowers and the plants, but like we have lilac bushes and I don't really worry about watering them this time of year, even if it's hot, should I?
I think they'll show you signs when those need water. And you know, there's indicator species that I use to look. Hydrangeas are a great one when you see those starting to wilt down. And I'm not talking about the ones that get pink and blue, those are called big leaf hydrangeas. But if you see the panicled hydrangeas or the oak leaf hydrangeas, those starting to wilt, that's telling you that your landscape's pretty dry. And once again, I don't think that you have to water. We're referring to maximizing health. And this is, we're talking about established plants. New plants that were planted within the last year or two absolutely need help once it starts getting hot and dry and need watered more frequently. And always check to make sure your soil is not wet before you water again, because overwatering is a major problem and killing with kindness is definitely something we see a lot of.
And you'll see the wilted leaves during the day. For me, if I see any of my shrubs or plants with wilted leaves during the day, if I know, like, well, if I've watered them in the past couple of days, then I tend not to worry about it if it's really hot. They're just drooping and trying to conserve water. But after the sun goes down, when I start to get ready for bed, if they're still wilted, then it might be an indicator that they're not just hot, that they also need some water too. So waiting a little bit later in the day and checking the yard again to see what's still wilted can help differentiate between just sort of the hot wilt versus the needs a drink of water wilt.
Now, I know a lot of people when they're watering will have like fertilizers attached to their watering systems. I don't use a lot of external fertilizers or inputs like that, but I'm wondering, should you take that off when you're starting to water your trees?
So I think if your tree really needs water, fertilizer is not the right thing to put in with it. If we're in a drought scenario or dry, we're not trying to push new growth in that scenario. If you've got a really well irrigated system and you're fertilizing appropriately at that time, but fertilizer is one of those things that the right amount or a little bit can be extremely beneficial, and too much is just really detrimental. So less is more, in my opinion, on that front.
We do have a call from Bob, so we'll go to Bob. Hi, Bob. What's your question?
I got a couple questions. We have a garden, and with all this heat, it's not always possible to water in the morning. Is watering in the evening just as good, or what about, Dan, I know during the day you can't, but what about evening watering?
In my opinion, evening is second to morning, because in the morning you have the sun to dry out things and take care of a lot of mold and fungal issues that might come up. But the evening when it's cool is still preferable to not watering at all. And definitely if you're watering foliage or overhead watering, definitely better than watering in the heat of the middle of the day.
And I got to say, I'm doing most of my gardening in the evening now because I can get a little bit done in the morning. But, you know, then life happens, work happens, errands happen. And so, yeah, I'm doing a lot more when that sun is a little bit lower in the sky.
Yes,
so.
Same. Almost all of mine is in the evening. You get, you know, kids and, you know, not all of us
late?
Are empty nesters. But, I mean, up until bedtime sometimes.
Really?
I mean,
okay.
if it's still light enough for me to see what I'm doing. I love being out there in the later in the evening than getting up early to do it in the mornings.
If you don't have a timer, I wouldn't leave like a hose on all night or a soaker or anything like that.
Yeah.
But if you've got a timer and you're consistent with it, you know it's going to shut off around 10 or something like that.
I think it depends on how annoying your kids are being that day, how late you stay out. And
Bob, you said you had another question?
Well, I got a couple questions if I can ask.
Sure.
Now, when you're watering, is it best just to keep it off the plant itself and just water around the root, around the bottom of your plants, like tomatoes and peppers and
yes.
plants like that?
Water the ground. There's very few things out there where you want to water the foliage. And if you don't know, you should be watering the ground, whether it's vegetables, trees, shrubs, whatever. There's very little moisture uptake through the leaves. Almost all of it's going to come through the root system.
And there used to be a myth that if you watered your plants and the sun hits the water, it's going to scorch the leaves. That's not true. It's just not as efficient if you're watering the leaves as opposed to watering the ground.
Okay, Bob, time for one more quick question.
Okay, when it comes to fertilizer, an organic fertilizer, is you have a brand or what percentage would be nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium?
I like to use the, I think it's Espoma makes it, but there's like a Holytone is a really good one. And it's because you can over-fertilize and it's a problem with the synthetic fertilizers, I like to recommend that one to homeowners because you can be a little more liberal with it and not as precise and not have any real consequence.
Bob, thanks so much for your call. Oh, I'm sorry. Go
ahead. Holytone is it called?
Holytone is one. And there's other specific ones in that label that may suit exactly what you're trying to fertilize. There's a Holytone and there's, I forget all the other ones there are, but Rose Tone.
Yeah.
So just you.
Okay.
But anywhere in that general product line will get you in the right place. And Holytone's really good for our alkaline soils here.
Okay. Well, thank you for your information. Thank you for the show.
All right. Thanks, Bob. We appreciate your call. We do have an email, and this is from Joe, who says, I just finished harvesting one of my rows of green beans, and I still have two additional rows producing. Can I pull up that harvested row and plant something else there this time of year? And if so, what would you recommend for Southwest Ohio? I'd prefer not to plant more green beans since I already have plenty.
So I think that you want to evaluate your soil. Think about what you've been growing in there. If you have been growing beans, you know, for a while, it's probably time to get a different plant family in there. And just so you can switch that up a little bit, the soils can get depleted if you're always growing tomatoes in the same place or always growing beans in the same place. You can do a lot with leafy greens. They tend to be fairly sturdy. You are going to have to pay close attention to them, though, especially because it can be very hot and challenging for these little plants. So if you start some things inside, like I said, I've got basils that I'm hardening off and putting out. I'll be doing more Swiss chard, kales, collards, things like that to get them a little sturdy. Your spinaches, and then they'll actually carry through past Thanksgiving in my garden. And so I'm actually able to harvest those for quite a long time.
I'm glad you said hardening off, because even in this weather, you can buy a plant that is, it might like full sun, it likes it really hot, but you go to the nursery and it is either indoors or it's under a shade cloth in the nursery. And then you take it and you put it in the middle of a blazing sun in your yard and you wonder why it's not doing so good. Sometimes when you buy your plants from a nursery, you still may need to spend a few days getting them adjusted to full sun, because if they have been under some sort of shade cloth or under a, you know, a roof or awning at the nursery, they're going to struggle a little bit, right, when you transplant them. So whatever you put in, just make sure that it is accustomed to full sun so that it's not going to wind up getting scorched or not.
How do you get them used to it? What were you saying?
So you can just, if you take the plant from the nursery and it might have had a shade cloth over the top of it, or it was underneath, you know, in a greenhouse, just putting it in the shade in your yard for a day or two, and then putting it in an area where there's a little bit more sun for a day or two, and just slowly getting the leaves accustomed to full sun. That way, when you then suddenly put it out in the blazing sun, it's not going to get quite as much heat shock. When you
what
put
the
it
heck
in.
Did you do to me?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can also add some really cost-effective row covers, things like that, to shade out a little bit of your soils and the place that you're planting. I think that I've seen some really creative trellising where you've got, you know, a whole bunch of cucurbits, maybe you got some squashes, something like that growing on a trellis, and then you're planting leafy greens under that. So you're taking advantage of that cooler temp, that less direct sun. And then once you harvest the vines, then you have these leafy greens. So it's kind of like a three sisters dynamic where you have the plants helping each other fulfill their life cycle.
Our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have Susan on the line. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
My question is, doesn't have to do with watering, but I live in East Walnut Hills, and one of the gardens that I take care of once a week has the spotted lanternfly flies everywhere, and I know that you're supposed to squish them, but, you know, I really don't want to touch them, so... Is there any other way we can get rid of these? I mean, I went online, there was a solution, half vinegar, half water to spray on it, but what does that do? Does it drown them or what? Any advice for me?
So you could use a variety of sprays if you wanted to kill them. I would be afraid of what vinegar would do to my plants. If you accidentally get the vinegar on the leaves, it could scorch, it could scorch those leaves. I mean, I don't have them in my home yet, but I think, you know, sometimes a broom can help, can be helpful if you just want to swat them to the ground and then step on them if you know that it's a lanternfly.
Okay. You've really got to pay attention, though, to where they are at. So what happens with these spotted lanternflies is that the host tree for this pest is an invasive tree, tree of heaven, Ailanthus altissima. And they'll roost up in there, or they'll house in these trees, and then they will exude this sticky sap, their waste product, and then that stickiness will get on your plants, and then that will attract fungal issues, and really it's actually sticky, especially if you've ever parked under, you know, a tree that's got, you know, something, a pest in there that's exuding honeydew. You've known that you can't really get it off your windshield very easily. So I think that would be a big concern, especially if I was trying to grow certain plants and then I'm getting all this sooty mold. So you would see the stickiness and then it would be followed by this sooty mold. So if you can identify where the critters are coming from, maybe there's a tree of heaven close by that you could remove, or you could talk to, you know, the other landowners next to the garden and try to find out where they're coming from so that you can treat the cause and not just the symptom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, I would suggest looking up tree of heaven just so you get a sense of what it actually looks like. If you do feel pretty sure that there's one of those in that garden, that is not a species that you would want to do on your own or have like a friend do it. You would want to call it a tree professional to take care of it, because it can be that's a nasty species to cut down. So just be careful if you do remove it to get a professional to do it, just to watch out for yourself.
There's not a tree of heaven in this garden because everything is identified. But they seem to like being around wood. We have raised beds there, and they seem to like that for some reason, or the stakes, to keep like tomato plants straight up, all that kind of.
You can also get a battery powered shop vac. I mean, there are some portable shop vacs that you can use that you could just suck them right up and not have to touch them if you wanted to do that.
Then what do you do with the shop vac? Then you got to empty.
Well, then
the
you got to dump that in the. Yeah.
Well, Susan, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. I hope some of that works for you. Thank you. That's a lot. I'm Carlos, our engineer, was saying that he's heard you can use a shop vac on those. I think that's really great until you have to empty the shop vac. and then do you have to squish them in the, I mean, will they die once they're sucked up? Or?
If you just leave them there long enough, I'm sure. But that, yeah, you could, you know, I don't mind personally squishing them. But I know some people just don't like doing it. So.
Well, if there's a lot of them, I don't know.
They're too fast for me. They jump.
They are on other tree species other than Ailanthus,
yeah,
is what we also should notice. It doesn't have to be exclusive to that. Yeah. And they'll climb on lots of different things, although Ailanthus tend to be one of the places where they reproduce, but you'll find them on lots of species. So you're not going to take down every tree that has it as a solution either.
So you just have to, I mean, what happens if they stay? I mean, are they killing things?
So you could, you couldn't do this on a forest level, but you could treat an individual tree with an insecticide that would control this thing that's feeding on it. And you have to decide if that's the right move for you or not. I've heard that in Pennsylvania and other places where this has started off much earlier than being here, that it's already thinning out there and becoming a non-issue naturally. Lots of insects have cycles where it ebbs and flows. So I don't know that you have to panic like this is going to be around forever if you can tolerate it for a couple of years. But if you do have a really sensitive area or a patio that you love using and these bugs are just raining down honeydew, which is a really nice term for bug poop, you're going to want to do something. And I think there are times when treatment does make sense and removal makes sense for the invasive species and the other junk trees.
And I think the problem is we don't really know what would happen. I mean, they seem to be pretty specific to the species they live on. Like, they love grapevines. So if you've got grapevines, you might want to be concerned. The state of Ohio is not overly concerned about them yet. But for any invasive species we've had, getting the public on board earlier so that we can get rid of it before anything happens. Like, let's just eradicate the invasive before they become a problem. So I think part of the response is just getting everyone on the same page so that even if it's not an issue later, let's just go ahead and take care of it so we don't have to risk it.
We had a person called Rama who says she wants people to understand the entire state is under quarantine of the spotted lantern fly. What does that mean?
We're probably under quarantine for more than just that, and other states too. So my big reminder is that if I'm ever going out of the state, or even if I'm traveling, you know, more than 30 miles away to go camping or anything like that, I am getting locally available wood. I am checking my clothes and my shoes. I'm scraping off those shoes if I'm going on hikes so that I'm not transferring maybe little seeds or things in my shoes. Checking your car. I just got back from a trip to Pelee Island in Canada, and I was making sure the mayflies were not coming back on the ferry with me. So you really want to stay localized with anything that you're using in an area. And so I think that that's always a good reminder.
We're talking gardening today, and in just a minute, we'll get to more of your questions. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. It's our gardening show today, and joining me are CEO of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, Inc., John Butcher, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. If you have a question, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We have a question emailed from Paul who said, he's wondering about good indoor plants. He lives in an apartment and is wondering how to get started inside.
Ooh, whenever I'm choosing an indoor plant, I like to go to a place that I really trust. There's some really fantastic garden centers around that really take good care of their plants. So that's kind of where I start. And then I've been interested in these plants that are good air purifiers and can pull toxins out of the air. So, you know, one that's just kind of in the background of a lot of places is a snake plant, also called mother-in-law's tongue. It's, you know, kind of can get tall and just sits in the corner. And I never really had an affinity for it until I started seeing how efficient these plants are at pulling toxins out of the air and purifying air. And so they actually are having them on, you know, they're sending them up to space and they're talking about putting them in biodomes and things. So that's something that I would take a look at. And there's some NASA research on that you can find.
And those grow pretty easily, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would start by drawing out your house or your apartment and putting, you know, which direction your windows are facing. So that is a southwest window, it's a north window. Does it get a lot of sun? Does it get a little sun? Take a few days to understand that. That way, when you go to any of these plant centers, garden centers, and you're asking questions, you can tell them, well, I have a south-facing window that is sunny all day long. There are a lot of succulents that you could get for those windows, cactus even. I love cactus for my windows. But things like snake plant or even like the spider plant, it's actually kind of, I think it's a lily actually, is a really great option for areas with no sun whatsoever. ZZ plant is another great one. If you don't have, they seem to be able to survive in just a dark closet, not literally in a dark closet. But know how much sun you're getting before you buy them.
And also just if you have pets at home or little ones at home, a lot of houseplants are toxic. Yeah. And so you want to be paying attention to that. Some of them will be dropping leaves or they have spines. So we have accepted several donations at the Civic Garden Center for people that were like, you know, my cat just won't stop eating this. And so pay attention to those things. But you can always put things up high. And I actually can't grow a spider plant in my house because really? It's not humid enough. I know. So humidity is a really big one. So I've got to put some shelves in my bathroom or something.
Monstera is a good option too. They seem to be able to tolerate a
Say
range
that one
of
again.
Conditions. Monstera, it's also called the Swiss cheese plant.
Okay.
It sort of looks like a big philodendron, but it's got a lot of little serrations, not serrations, little lobes in it. Mm-hmm. So that's another good option.
Good. We have a question from Sally who says she has irrigated endless summer hydrangeas. She waters them at 8 a.m. every day and they are wilted every afternoon by 2 or 3. Is there anything she can do?
Those are probably planted in the wrong spot if they're struggling that much with sun. And I would say that a cooler spot on a different side of the house or under the shade of another tree would be a great place to move them. Now is probably not the right time to move them. And she should probably wait until fall when it cools down a little bit and to find a shadier spot.
So what is is shady the best place for a hydrangea?
Well, they don't want full shade, but they definitely need some protection from the sun. The macrophylla or big leaf hydrangeas are one of the hydrangeas that really don't like full sun. Some hydrangeas love full sun. That particular kind tends to struggle. The other thing that might happen is if it stays there for another year or two, it might develop enough of a root system and acclimate to that site and do a little bit better. But it sounds like if she's watering it that much and it's still not doing well, it's probably not the best fit.
Now, my sister planted some in the front of her house, and I felt like where it was planted, it was so heavy clay right next to the house that her water was just sitting there. So she was seeing drooping and wilting, but then she was over water. I think she was drowning those because they really didn't have a place for the water to go. So the water was just inundating the roots.
That could be possible too. Yeah. Shouldn't need watered every day, especially in clay soil.
So who wanted to talk about crepe myrtle? Somebody said they wanted to talk about
it. I love crepe myrtle. Yeah.
Now, I had to look it up because I had not, I thought, do I know what a crepe myrtle is? And I looked and I'm not sure I've seen many of them. Are they good for this area?
So if you know what you're getting, they're fantastic. They are a plant that's a southern plant. And in really cold winters, they will die back some or all the way to the ground. It's possible for a plant that's not established, it may die all the way. But in most cases, even when they die back, you'll get sprouts back from the ground and they'll bloom again the following summer. And it's kind of like a reset. But there's, in my opinion, no better perennial color in Cincinnati than what crepe myrtle provide. They started blooming a week or so ago, and they just have the most prolific, brightest color blooms. There's pinks and reds and lavenders and whites. I have one on the side of my house that I planted 15 years ago, and it's higher than the two stories. And it's
so they are big plants.
They can get really big. This one's planted in what happens to be a perfect spot, which is something that takes a little trial and error sometimes, and you don't always know. But it's on the west side of the house. It gets the direct heat from the foundation over the winter, so I think everything stays fairly warm. And I feel like there is some risk with it dying back, and some people struggle with that. But I don't think there's anything else that provides big landscape color for the length of time that a crepe myrtle can.
It's like as bright as a bougainvillea. Like it's
crazy just, bright. Yeah.
We went to Mammoth Cave a couple years ago, and they had a bunch there at the campground.
And the bark is so cool, too. It gets this like peely, different colored texture, browns and whites in the bark. And it just, I
find it. Do you plant it as a little plant or as a big? I mean, how big is it?
I typically recommend a 7-gallon pot is what most of them come in, but a 3-gallon pot's fine. And 3-gallon is, I mean, it's not really gallons, it's nursery trade. So a number 3 pot or a number 7 pot is the technical way to say that. But I think starting small and planting them in the spring or summer is the best way to have success so that you have the full season for them to develop a little bit of a stronger root system before we hit the first winter.
What about, were you going to say something, Corey?
I agree with the length of time they're blooming, and I like you, which is why I'm going to let you have the crepe myrtle.
conservationist.
But in terms of color, I think it's hard to beat redbud. So for people who really want that like fluorescent, almost fluorescent pink purple, like crepe myrtles can give you, redbuds can do the exact same thing. They just don't bloom for as long.
What's a redbud? I don't know anything about it.
It's a gorgeous native tree, heart-shaped leaves, edible blooms. It's in the pea family. They don't get that tall. They're adaptable to sun, shade. Native to this area. They're one of my favorites because they're just an easy tree. But having grown up in Georgia, we had crepe myrtles that don't die back in the winter, and they absolutely can, you know, top 20, 30 feet when they're really... They get enormous down there. Yeah. Wow.
And redbuds are amazing. There's a variety, a cultivar called Appalachian Redbud. If you really want that bright pink fuchsia color, that one's great for that.
How big do those get? Those get big too?
Yeah, they might get, 20 feet 20, maybe?
20 foot's about the size you would.
So are these trees or bushes?
They are trees.
They're trees. Yeah.
Small trees, typically understory, so you'd find them on the edge of the woods. But they tolerate full sun really well, actually. They tolerate our clay soils really well.
But they have to be up against a house?
Like, No. Redbuds can pretty much grow anywhere. I mean, I think you could put it on any side of the house you wanted.
And there's so many different cultivars, nativars of redbuds. We have a weeping one that has white flowers that comes up over in our compost corner area. And then we have another one that has those purple leaves. So that's a different cultivar. And then
I'm thinking about this. I think we have a redbud tree in our backyard. It's pink in the spring, but then it's green the rest of the year, right?
It blooms directly on the stems.
Yes.
And on the,
okay. Yeah. Yes. Yep. I know what that is now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And you might see my kids foraging off the tree in the spring because they taste like peas, the little
really?
Blooms. The little blooms are edible. Sprinkle them on your salad. Yeah.
Wow. Great. Okay, we got to get to a couple quick questions. A person says, I've lost my garden the last 2 years because of too much sun on my vegetables. Is there any suggestions you can give to protect them from too much sun other than planting in a different location?
I mean, you can create a lath house or a shade structure, which a lot of people will use in tandem with growing something else. So I know grapevines are a little bit tricky right now, especially with spotted lanternfly. I lost my grapevines last year, which was a bummer. But there are other plants that you can grow on a trellis that will then provide a little bit of shade. So think about how you might want to interact with your space. The problem, too, though, with shade is then, okay, you have maybe less ventilation, and then you might have more fungal issues, or you just might need to be growing something a little bit different. A lot of our gardens get shadier over time because we love trees and we plant trees, and then we're like, now my garden is very shady. So if you want to get into trees, I've been doing a lot of fruit tree planting. Those love to be in full sun, but it doesn't make me have to go out there multiple times a week to check on them as often as I would for other annual edible crops.
Do you use sun sails very often? Because I've seen people who just put up, you know, 4 posts and they just hang sun sails like you would see at a playground.
Really?
For part of the year when it's getting really hot, and then they take them down in August so that, you know, that way they still...
Their own personal umbrella.
Yeah, kind of. And they still maintain the garden as full sun, but they offered a little protection.
Nice.
Might be harder than a tree to plant, but, you know.
We have a follow-up question from Sally about the hydrangeas that she waters in the morning and they aren't doing well. She says they are endless summer hydrangeas and they're planted in a shady location. So could something else be causing the wilting?
Well, that may be, Mary might have nailed it earlier with the overwatering. And the symptoms of overwatering look much like not getting enough water. And if they're in a shady location and they need a daily watering, something's wrong. And I would ask that you check the soil before you put any more water down. And if it's cool and moist, give it another day, 2 days, 3 days, and back off the other way. And
but also, we mentioned at the beginning of the hour that it's just adaptation of plants to try to hold on to some of that water. So some of that wilting, especially 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, might be a response to that. And so the plant might naturally do that and then perk back up.
And I had a hydrangea in my yard that did a similar thing. And when I looked at the base of the, you know, the trunk or the stem that at the ground, rabbits had chewed just enough of it that it was still able to thrive, but it wasn't really thriving. So check the base to make sure that nothing's been chewing on the stem of the plant.
All right. Very good. I think, is Jennifer still on? Jennifer, I think we just lost. Oh, there she is. All right. We're going to go real quickly to Jennifer. Jennifer, hello.
Hi, I'm here.
All right. What's your question?
Thank you. I have a tomato plant on my deck in a planter, and I'm watering it daily, but the leaves are curling pretty intensely, and I've noticed every morning there are quite a few what look to be gnats that are all over the stems and the leaves, and I don't know if I have a bug or if I need more nutrients in the soil. I'm not sure.
So there's a few things coming through my head for that. If the pot doesn't have proper drainage, there might be too much water in there. So you want to make sure that that's draining properly. I like to water deep, and so I will water until I see water coming out of a pot, and then usually I don't need to water for at least a few more days. If you didn't put new soil in and you're reusing soil, you could be losing some of that much-needed nitrogen that the plant is going to need for healthy green leaves. The gnats, though, that's usually – they're around something that they can eat. So if there's a wetness in the soil, fungus in the soil, or if you have leaves that are laying on top of the soil surface, or, you know, I'm already starting to get some cherry tomatoes, and I'm picking the ones up that are falling because I don't want them to be consistently wet on that soil surface.
Good. All righty. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for your call. We certainly appreciate that. We are almost out of time. I'm going to give you each 10 seconds for the best tip you can give me right now for planting. John.
Well, I'm going to go to this tomato thing. And if you're planting in pots, if they're not big enough, they're going to dry out really quickly. And you're probably going to need water every day, not every 3 days. If you have a big enough pot, it can go a little longer.
Very quick. Mary.
I just think that it's a great time to look at what's doing well and think about what you can plant in future seasons that will do just as well, if not better. So if you have a plant that's really struggling, let's, you know, maybe plant something else.
Corey, 10 seconds.
Plant native.
Plant native. All right, I love it. Thanks so much for being here. What a pleasure. I've been talking with CEO of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, Inc., John Butcher, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Lucy May. She will be back tomorrow.